Dan Abeda, Forest Service.
Great, thanks, everybody, for being here. Yeah, we tried to start this meeting at 6 o'clock. That's what was on the agenda, but nobody showed. Everybody here at 6:30. They said 6:30 on the radio, too. Well, good. Anyway, you reviewed the agenda. Is the agenda in order? Is there anything else we need to add or correct or anything? If not, we need just a general approval of the agenda.
I recommend we approve the agenda.
I second it.
Second it. Okay, all in favor? Okay, thank you. Looks like it was unanimous. Also, have you reviewed the last meeting's minutes? And we need an approval on last meeting's minutes. I went out and represented our meeting out at the state board meeting, even though I wasn't here the last meeting, but minutes read well.
Recommend we approve the minutes.
Okay, Beth made a motion to approve the minutes. Do I have a second?
Yeah, I'll second.
Okay, Dan seconds it. All in favor? Unanimous. Thank you. Like was introduced, Brett Prevedel is a new member here on the board with us. Andrea Merrill's excused this evening. We've got some others that are missing also. Mitch Hacking, Agricultural, John Mathis, our elected official, and Joe Batty, Agriculture. So, and we'd like to recognize Kurt Woodward with us from the State Board. He's here in the audience. So. Okay, that's all that I have. Go ahead and give us a regional update.
I'm going to try and keep this brief. Because of our large agenda that we've got, but I just wanted to touch on a couple of things. We've got a real busy couple of months coming up with fishing events, ice fishing clinics. We have our moose pond clinic January 3rd or sooner possibly, depending on ice conditions. Our Big Sand Wash January the 10th, Steinecker January 19th. We start the Burbot Bash over in Daggett County on January 23rd through the 25th. The Parks competition, that starts January 31st at Steinecker and then moves to Starvation on February the 7th. And then there's the Burbot Classic in February. So there's quite a list of opportunities for our sportsmen out there for aquatics. Now, last time we were here, I was really excited about our new app, but I wasn't able to show it off. I'm able to do that today. I'm really excited about this app. We're sure moving into an electronic age, and there's a lot of neat things that we can do with these cell phones now. And one of the things that you'll be able to do is you can download all of your licenses on this, and you'll be able to take it into the field. Now, naturally, you're not going to tie this to the antler, but so you'll still need to have that part of your paper. But if you're fishing or something like that, you can download your license onto your phone, and you can have that with you. If you're out with your combination license doing bird hunting and whatnot, you'll be able to have this. This is a really, really cool app. And I'm really excited to show it to you. Let's see.
While he's preparing that, one thing, I want to make comments here at the meeting. If you'll fill out one of the comment cards and bring it forward to me, it would be good. As we go through the agenda items and stuff, we need a comment card for you to make comments.
I got to get this ready to go. I didn't want to show you guys my secret passcode. So, because especially my own guys that work here for me, I really didn't want them to see what my passcode was. It'd be amazing what I'd find on this
on this phone the next day.
We already know, boy.
There's my beautiful wife, and no, let's move on. Oh, yeah, that is Mitch. That's not my beautiful wife. All right.
You can find a parking spot.
You'll see here, there's the app icon there. So if you tap on that, there's all kinds of neat things. You can see that I've downloaded a couple of the licenses that I have. This is the resident combination license that I've got, and also my antlerless. And if I tap on that, it gives me, there's my barcode that you guys all see on your licenses. And it gives some of the information there. We won't go into depth on some of the other information that you could get on that, but it's there. And so I want to know where my hunt area is. I can tap on that. And there, that little purpley colored thing there, that's my antlerless hunt area. So you guys will be able to pack that, and maybe you forgot where your hunt area is. It'll show up on these maps, and so it'll tell you where to go. Now then, so those are the licenses. Now for hunting, you can you got your waterfowl species IDs on there for waterfowl. You can go back to hunting again. It'll show you your upland game species, your grouse, turkey, in case somebody's out hunting turkey and doesn't know what a turkey looks like, they can look it up. And then the partridges that are found in Utah. So you can see here there's all the different species that you can be out hunting that are on there. Go back to hunting. If you're out and you want to report a poacher, you're able to tap on that, and it'll ask you the information or provide. Well, let's tap on it and see. It'll give you the phone numbers, and it'll also give you an online form that you can fill out. So you can help us by reporting poaching incidents. Now then, you can also get your own draw history results. That's going to take me over into the onto the internet. I don't want to go there for right now. It'll take us a little bit longer than I want to. You also can find your walk-in access properties or state lands, some of our WMAs. It'll take you right to it. It'll give you a big map. Then you can, by spreading it out with your fingers, you can zoom in on certain areas, and we have several walk-in access areas in this region. We also have a lot of what we call WMAs, wildlife management areas, that the state owns that we manage for sportsmen, and you'll be able to find these on there. Now, you're out there, and you're probably not going to be able to purchase a license if you haven't got one already out there. You should have already purchased that. But say you're at home and you've got your license there, or you got your phone here, and you need to buy a license. You can do that with this app as well. So how cool is that? We'll go to fishing. You can it'll even give you your fishing species identification, your sport fish. But this is the non-sport fish. I must have closed my eyes when I went to tap that. So here's your sport. Here's your sport fish. Oh, rainbow trout, lake trout. It'll give you the looks of all the sport fish that we have in Utah. Again, walk-in access. Now, this is another thing that's really cool is the events. Now, we've got DWR events. We got a lot of them. And say you're sitting at home and you don't have anything to do. You don't have any honeydew lists hanging on the fridge and stuff like that. You can tap on that and go, well, I think I want to go do some wildlife stuff today. What do I want to do? Well, we got Hardware Ranch, winter elk viewing. You can go out and it gives you the times when it starts. So it's going to start December 12th. You can visit the ranch and what days and times it's open. There's the WMA Elk Festival talks about that. Christmas, the Burbot Bash that I talked about here, when that is. There's maybe not everything, but most things that we have here that's available to you for you to look at, you'll be able to just look this right up online and be able to attend. Now then, this also will tell you when the hunt drawings are on here. So you're wanting to know when the drawings are. This may save us a lot of phone calls or a lot of answering of phones. So it may save you guys a lot of phone calls, but it'll give you the deadlines, when they are, and so forth. public meetings. So in case you were wondering, there is a RAC meeting here tonight. And on this thing here, it says 6:30. So we started it on time, according to this. So
what am I going to do for excuses?
So somebody's going to have to make it on time.
No excuses anymore.
So now you want to know when the Wildlife Board meeting is? It's right here online. So wildlife viewing opportunities, we have a lot around the state. We have a lot in this region. Ron does a good job of having these where people can get out and go look at bighorn sheep, or they can go look at goats and things like that. So there's lots of opportunities, as you can see, and they're all right here on the phone now. And so this is a really cool app. I had a lot of fun playing around with it. Like I say, downloading my licenses and things. There were some things about me I had no idea on here. So you guys, you can download this app for yourselves. It's free, and you can get it for Apple devices and for Android devices, and you go to your Google Play Store or your iTunes Store, and you just type in there Utah DWR, and you'll come to the to this app. You'll get that, and then you just download it. Like I say, it's free of charge, and we're just going leaps and bounds into this technological age. And so I'm pretty excited about it. People will be able to find things out on their own really quickly. So, any questions? Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. Super.
Any other regional?
So we need to download the app. Next on our agenda, we have Kent Hershey is going to give us the deer survey. Welcome, Kent.
Down at the bottom this time.
Okay, thank you. Is that close enough? Is it even on?
It should be on. It was. Try it now.
Okay, thanks. So tonight I'm going to present to you the results of a mule deer hunter survey that we conducted this past spring. And so the purpose of the survey is we wanted to seek input from the hunting public about what they wanted to see in Utah with deer management. And then we wanted to take the results of the survey, provide them to the Mule Deer Committee, and use them to help develop the 2014 statewide mule deer management plan. So what we did was we surveyed a random sample of anyone who applied for or obtained a buck deer permit in 2013. And then we stratified this group of people into six categories: those who are dedicated hunters, those who put in for general season archery, general season muzzleloader, or the general season any weapon,
those who just were interested in the limited entry hind, and then those who did both or applied for both general season and limited entry. And so we had two meetings with the Mule Deer Committee, one in April, one in May, to develop the survey. We went over the old survey we last conducted in 2008, and then we looked at those questions as a starting point, and we ran all those by the committee and revised them and added and subtracted accordingly. Until we got a product that the committee and we were happy with as an agency. And then we sent that survey out to over 9,000 hunters, which is a little over 1,500 in each one of those six categories. And this was out of a total pool of 141,000 hunters or applicants. And so this was an internet-based survey that took about 15 minutes in length to complete. The questions were primarily rating questions. We gave them a situation and asked whether they liked it, disliked it, agreed with it, disagreed, yes-no type questions, or multiple choice. And then the survey was open for 3-week period with a reminder sent out after 1 week and then again after 2 weeks. So overall, we received a little over 2,600 responses, which was a 30% return rate, and it's about what we expected. Our goal was to get around 400 in each one of those six categories, which would have been 2,400, so we were a little above that. Although we were a little short for dedicated hunters, we only had like 380-some respondents, so a little short of the target. And I think the archery was also a little short. So, you know, although we didn't quite get to the 400, which is the kind of a magical number in statistics, we did get enough for some valid inference. And then what we did is we took that 141,000 people, we looked at the percent of each group that applied for that, and then that allowed us to take and weight our survey responses accordingly so that we can get one answer for what the hunting public in Utah wanted to see. So moving on to the results, and this is not all the results. For time purposes, I cut it down considerably and just focused on the questions that mostly pertain to the deer plan. For the RAC folks in the packet, I believe you got all the questions. So this will just be the highlights here. So the first question is a question we ask on most of our surveys, and that's why do you hunt? And almost always, as we see here, the top answer is being with friends and family. That was followed by harvesting a large antlered buck, putting meat on the table, getting away from the usual demands of life, being close to nature, and bringing back pleasant memories. So, you know, from these, you can see, I mean, most of the answers are more social-oriented, family-oriented types. So that just shows that this is a chance to be with family and friends is the key. But the second answer, which is a little surprising, harvesting a large antler buck, normally that falls further down the list. On this survey, it ranked number 2, so indicates there's certainly a segment out there that is interested in harvesting a quality animal. Next, we asked about their hunt satisfaction on previous hunts, or on any hunt, rather. We asked whether they were satisfied whether they harvested a buck regardless of size, and half the people indicated they disagreed with that statement. We then asked if they were satisfied with their hunt even if they didn't harvest, and about half the people indicated, yeah, that's a true statement. And then we took that one step further and said, are you satisfied with your hunt, even if you don't harvest, as long as you're seeing bucks? And 70% of the people agreed with that. So when you take all three of these questions together, it's basically saying that, you know, people want to go out, they want to have a good hunt, they want to see bucks and have a chance to pursue them, but they don't necessarily need to harvest for them to be happy. Next question dealt with hunter crowding. It's a common question we ask in our surveys, and the results are usually the same. Are very similar. We find about half the people who go hunting say they felt crowded, about half didn't feel crowded. So it just seems like it's a situation, and regardless of what we do, about half tend to feel this way, so half don't. We next asked about their previous hunts and how satisfied they were with the number of bucks they saw and the size of bucks they saw. For both questions, about 60% of the people indicated they were dissatisfied, meaning they wanted to see more and bigger animals. So we asked whether they were willing to accept additional restrictions in order for us to manage for those bigger animals. And over 70% indicated yes, they were willing. So We then gave them four potential options that we as an agency could implement that would lead to larger antlered animals out in the field. The first was we can convert general season units to limited entry. About 45% of the people said they did not like that, and a third said they did. We could offer fewer rifle tags and switch them over to archery and muzzleloader, lowering overall success, killing fewer animals, and having more bucks that way. 45 said they didn't like it, only a third did. We could have road and trail closures during the hunt, limiting access, limiting success, and producing more bucks that way. Half did not like it, a little over 30 did. And the last option was giving up hunting every year. So just that would basically just be cutting tags. And nearly 50% did not like it, and a third did. So of the four options we presented to them, they did not like any of them, although 70% indicated they were willing. They obviously weren't willing on the options we gave them. So basically, they want both, and the two aren't compatible, I guess. Next round of questions dealt with our current management system and what they thought of that. So we provided them the distribution of our units, which we have 30 general season, 7 limited entry, and 2 premium limited entry. And we asked whether they'd like to see more or fewer of each one of these. So starting with the premium limited entry, which is the red here, 60% said they liked where we're at with the two. A little over 15 said they wanted fewer, and only a little over 20 indicated they wanted more. For the limited entry, about 45% liked where we were with the 7. 35 said, yeah, we'd like to see some more, and a little less than 20 said, I was reading the wrong one there. But so a little, 35 said they wanted more, and about 12 said fewer. And then for general season, 35% said fewer, and a little less than 20 said more, but the majority liked where we were at. So in all cases, the majority of people liked our current situation, our current structure. Although if there is any desire for change, it would be fewer general season and more limited entry. For our permit distribution, we currently issue permits about 60% go to rifle, 20% archery, 20% muzzleloader. And the majority, again, indicated that they liked our current split. There was some support to have fewer rifle tags and then divide them amongst the muzzleloader and archery. For season length, we currently have a 28-day archery season, 9-day muzzleloader, 9-day rifle. Majority of people like this. With most people, some people indicating that the archery at 28 days is a bit too long, and some with the muzzleloader and rifle too short. But most people did like this current length. For season timing, a vast majority of people, again, liked where we're currently at with the mid-October rifle hunt, August, September archery, and late September, early October muzzleloader. For the rifle deer hunt in particular, we asked whether they would support or oppose a hunt that was shorter than 9 days. The majority of people, nearly 60%, were opposed to a hunt shorter than 9 days. And we then followed that up whether they wanted a rifle hunt with only one weekend. And again, 60% indicated that they did not like that either. So for the rifle hunt, the people like where we're at. We have the Saturday opener with a 9-day hunt that gives us 2 weekends and a 9-day period. And most people like that the way it is. We then gave them an option whether they could hunt deer and elk at the same time, whether they thought this was a good or bad idea. About a third of the people liked it, a little over 40%, 40% liked it rather, and about a third were opposed to it. And then last option we gave was the potential to hunt on general season units, have a small number of permits in early November that were limited entry, used limited entry points to draw, and whether they thought this was a good idea. And about half the people said it was good, was a good idea and worth pursuing. Only 20% were opposed. So in summary, as we find with most of our surveys, the social aspects of hunting play a large role in determining why people hunt in Utah. That's not too surprising. And although it's not the majority, there certainly is a proportion of the hunting public that wants to see more quality hunting opportunities out there. Many hunters say they'd like to see more and bigger bucks, but when we and say they're willing to take the restrictions, but when we actually give them the options that we can realistically do, they don't seem willing to accept those. And then overall, it seems like hunters are pretty satisfied with our current management system. So in summary of everything, I think we as a committee and an agency use the results of this survey quite a bit when we're rewriting the plan and redoing it. And I think we talked about the survey at the beginning once it was completed, and then we kept referring back to it as we were in different parts of the plan. And I think as Justin gives his presentation on the plan itself, you'll be able to see how we incorporated the results I just went over into that. Thank you. That's all I have.
Yeah, any questions?
Can we go back to your original graph on the percentage of hunters that were limited entry in general? Mm-hmm. I've got a question.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now on your general season, which is 42% of your respondents?
That's not respondents, that's of applicants. So of this 140,934, 42% of that just put in for the rifle.
Okay. Now that's not who responded to your survey then, right?
No, the responses were, we emailed about 1,500 in each one of these categories. So we were trying to target 400 people in each, and then we weighted it by these percentages so that it was proportionate to this 141,000.
Okay, that was my question. Because if you had a larger number of limited entry hunters that responded to it, that would favor their opinions on the other graphs.
It would, but since we weighted it, limited entry had carried 14% of the weight.
So it was weighted that way.
It was.
Okay.
Yes.
That answers my question.
Okay. Any other questions?
I just have a comment. Kev puts his heart and soul into this. He did a bang-up job. I just want to thank him for it.
Okay. Thanks, Kim. Any questions by the public? Come to the mic, state your name, and question.
Yeah, my name's Matt Draper. I just wanted a question about, or an answer. When the public, on one of the surveys, wanted to see more limited entry opportunity. I was wondering what defined that, if it was just I recognize that a limited entry, like bonus preference point, is different from general season. What more in depth, what are you getting at?
Well, basically, a hunt with fewer tags, higher buck doe ratios, higher opportunity to kill larger bucks, and higher success is basically what we're doing. How we differentiate the two. So technically, I guess with that general season, hunting general season, it wouldn't be higher buck doe ratios, but because of the timing of that hunt, we would consider that limited entry because it would have much higher success and a lot less competition with hunters.
Thank you. You got one more question here?
Blake Bess, dedicated hunter. In that last slide, you guys mentioned that most hunters were pretty satisfied. Could you scroll back to that other slide that showed the comparison of the dissatisfied hunters? Yeah, that one right there. Could you explain that a little more to where in your clause that hunters were satisfied versus this slide here?
Yeah, it's a little bit... This slide might be a little misleading because it is an open-ended question. It says basically a simple question: are you satisfied with the number of bucks and size of bucks you saw in your hunt? I guess we can equate that to a question that said, are you satisfied with how much you're getting paid? And I guess most people would say, no, I'm not satisfied with it. So it's a bit potentially a leading question towards the negative side because everybody always wants to see more and better. In these situations, the way we came to that conclusion that most people were satisfied with their current structure is when you look through a lot of these current distribution of units and that almost always everybody said they wanted no change. That was the majority of people in each situation for premium versus general season, permit distribution, season length, season timing. So when we take all those together, the majority liked where we're at with the status quo and didn't want to see a whole lot of shakeup. So based on that, I think it's fair to say that most people like where we're at and have seen improvement.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Kent, for your presentation. We'll go into six. Justin Shannon will give us the statewide mule deer management plan revisions. It's an action item.
There's two on here, which doesn't matter which one.
Just check. It didn't come up as being different.
Yeah, I hope this is it. Okay, thank you for having us. My name is Justin Shannon, and tonight I'm going to present the 2014 Statewide Mule Deer Plan. But before I begin, I want to thank the Mule Deer Committee for helping us draft this plan and put this together. There was a lot of effort and energy and time spent by many of these individuals to come and help. And I think we had a really diverse group. We had a really passionate group of individuals. We had representation from many of the sportsman groups, landowners, Farm Bureau, the federal land management agencies, the public, universities. And we had representation from every regional advisory council, and Randy, I want to thank you personally for all the time and energy you put into this as well. So he really represented the Northeast region very well on this plan. And we couldn't have had the product we had without their participation. So to begin, we held 9 meetings from the middle of April from the middle of September. And that was a lot of time. We spent nearly 40 hours in a room trying to draft this survey, what should be in it, what should be out, how should it be worded, and then all the content and the goals of the management plan. A lot of effort went into this. And the way that we broke this plan up is we have a section on population management, a section on habitat management, and then one on recreation. And essentially we put together goals and objectives for each of these three segments of the plan, and a list of strategies, which I'll get into as we go forward. So the management goal for the population section is to expand and improve mule deer populations throughout the state and within the carrying capacity of the available habitats. The population objective, what we were trying to accomplish with this is over the next 5 years, we wanted to bring all unit objectives or all units to their population objectives throughout the state, which is currently about 425,000 mule deer. So where are we at now? Right now, we'll get another mule deer population estimate here in a couple months, but as of January 2014, we're about 333,000 mule deer statewide. And as you can see, over the last 20 years, it took a really good hit in the early 90s, kind of crawled out of it, and we had some peaks and some valleys along the way. And again, where we're at now is just shy of 350,000. So some of the strategies that go in the population section, and this is not all of them by any means, but this will give you a flavor of and the tone of what we were working with as a committee and as the agency putting this together. The first strategy is to conduct annual browse assessments to ensure habitats can support our current mule deer populations. Also, on units that are chronically below objective and where habitat is not a limiting factor, we want to manage predators according to the current predator management policies we have in place. We want to implement research to identify and protect migratory corridors. This was really important to the Mule Deer Committee, and we want to put a lot of energy towards that over the next 5 years. And then in addition to antlerless harvest, we want to continue using translocation as a management strategy.
And last year, about this time, we presented an amendment to the statewide plan that listed release sites throughout the state of where we could take translocated deer. And throughout this process, we wanted to add six more. The first is on the Box Elder unit, the Raft Rivers. The second would be Hardware Ranch. The third is Cedar Hollow up on the Camas unit. Closer to here, the Horse Ridge and Lake Canyon on the Aviniquin unit. And then in southern Utah, the Browse area and Pine Valley. Moving on to the habitat goals and objectives. The goal is to conserve, improve, and restore mule deer habitat throughout the state with an emphasis on crucial ranges. The first objective we have here is to maintain mule deer habitat by protecting and enhancing existing crucial habitats and mitigating for losses. The second objective is over the next 5 years, we wanted to improve the quality and quantity of vegetation and treat 500,000 acres statewide. Some of the strategies in the habitat section are to identify and rank threats and limiting factors within each unit. This is going to be really important as individual unit plans come through the process, and local biologists and managers put a lot of thought into how we can get these populations to grow and what's limiting growth. We also wanted to continue to support the Utah Watershed Restoration Initiative, which is where a lot of our habitat restoration comes from. Wanted to emphasize important habitat types such as sagebrush steppe, aspen, and riparian areas. Continue to support the big game range trend studies and use acceptable guidelines for mitigating energy development. Moving on to recreation, the goal here is to provide a diversity of high quality hunting and viewing opportunities for mule deer throughout the state. The first objective is to maintain a hunting program that encourages a variety of quality hunting opportunities while maintaining population objectives. And the second recreation objective is to increase opportunities for viewing mule deer and educating the public about the importance of habitat and other limiting factors. So some of the individual strategies here under the recreation section is we want to continue to provide three hunt unit categories: general season limited entry and premium limited entry, in approximately the current distribution to provide a variety of hunting opportunities. And so what this will look like is if you look at general season, we didn't recommend any change in this plan. We recently went from, a couple of years ago, made a change to where half our units would be $15 to $17 per 100 does, and the other half would be managed for $18 to $20. And we wanted to let that ride for the next 5 years and provide general season units that had some more opportunity and a little bit more quality. And then on limited entry, again, no change. We want to continue to manage limited entry units for $25 to $35 per 100 does. Where we do get into some change is under the premium limited entry units. We want to manage these for a 3-year average of $40 to $55 per 100 does, with greater than 40% of the harvested deer being 5 years of age or older. And the way that is different than the last plan is the last plan we used to manage $40 to $50 per 100 does, and so we're adding the top end of that a little bit higher. So if this unit's at $52 per 100 does or something, that's still okay, with a little bit more quality. The biggest change probably comes where we used to manage to where 40 to 55% of the bucks had to be 5 years or older. And so if you were over 55% of the bucks being 5 years, the division would recommend increases in permits. And if you were under 40%, we would recommend decreases in permits. And now what we're doing is we're taking the top end of that off. And so if 100% of the bucks are 5 years or older, we're okay with that. We wouldn't come back with permit recommendation increases in the future over the life of this plan. And the idea behind this is the spirit of these units is are to have extremely high quality, and so why put a cap on that quality? We would have baseline permits for the public draw. They'd be recommended at current levels, similar to what we recommended last year. And we want to continue to provide management buck hunts to provide additional hunting opportunity with a minimum of 10 permits on each unit. Another recreation strategy in the plan is to recommend permits for three weapon types based on the following percentages: 20% archery, 20% muzzleloader, and 60% for any weapon. This will be the standard as we move forward in the plan, but there may be some exceptions. So we have some units that the percentages may be altered to help achieve minimum buck-to-doe ratio objectives. We have units in the state where we continue to cut permits and cut permits, and what we see is just increases in success rates and same amount of bucks are being harvested. So we're losing that opportunity, and in those situations we may get creative and alter these percentages. Another strategy is on appropriate limited entry and premium limited entry units. We want to provide a multi-season hunting opportunity, and this will essentially allow 3% of the hunters to hunt all seasons for an increased fee, similar to what we do for bear and elk right now, or the dedicated hunter program, I guess, but for limited entry and premium limited entry deer units, which we don't have currently. We also want to establish season lanes that provide adequate hunting opportunity as follows: 28-day archery, 9-day muzzleloader, and 9-day any weapon. There are some exceptions, though. As we explore deer and elk seasons that overlap, or as we recommend high country buck hunts, these may vary from the 9-day formulas. If we're trying to harvest deer that are leaving the state or coming into Utah, we may get creative with our 9-day seasons as well. Extended archery areas are certainly going to be longer than 28 days, and management buck hunts also might be shorter than 9 as well. We wanted to explore hunting bucks in late October or early November on general season units to provide additional limited entry hunting opportunity. These types of hunts would only occur on units that are managed for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, and we'd have to be exceeding those buck-to-doe ratio objectives to call for these hunts. And permits would be limited in number, and we would be part of the bonus point draw system. So you'd lose your bonus points, not your preference points, if you put in for one of these permits and obtained it. Some things that we're going to look at over the life of the plan. We don't have all the sideboards or the details put together, but these are ideas that the committee had, and we support, and there's strategies in the plan, but I don't pretend to have all the answers tonight. But this strategy here is to examine allowing hunters to harvest a cougar with their buck deer permit on units that qualify for predator management and where the harvest objective quota has not been met. Hunters would not be allowed to use hounds during this hunt. So that's one thing that we'd like to explore throughout the life of this plan. Another strategy is to investigate issuing a preference point to future first-time hunter education graduates. What we found as we were looking through the data and as we were getting feedback from committee members was oftentimes people have a lot of interest in putting in for deer hunts shortly after finishing hunter education, and only about 40% to 50% of them were actually obtaining permits their first year into it. And so we wanted to make sure we maintain that momentum that they have in that fire to hunt and be interested in. So this is something we want to look at over the life of the plan. We want to explore additional opportunities to provide incentives to landowners that supply forage for mule deer. Our private lands are extremely important for mule deer populations and keeping the objectives that we have. We also want to investigate consolidating the mule deer preference and bonus points into a single draw system. Again, not something we're recommending tonight, something we're going to look at over the life of the plan and see if this makes sense. We also want to provide hunting opportunities that will encourage youth participation and maintain those family hunting traditions. An example would be exploring the maximum group size of applicants from 4 to 6 and various things like that. So in summary, this plan provides guidance and direction for managing Utah's mule deer populations, and it's being proposed as a 5-year plan. Mule deer recommendations that will be made will have to fall under the umbrella of this plan and be in accordance with the content that's passed tonight. And I know I started this way, but I can't thank the Mule Deer Committee for their efforts and participation enough. So, and that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the rack?
On that, where you had opportunity for people to hunt all 3 hunts, was that just for elk and bear?
I probably wasn't very clear. We currently do it for elk and bear now, but what we're proposing to do is to do that for limited entry and premium limited entry deer units.
For all limited entry units. Yeah. Are they going to be additional permits? Or?
No. What it would do is that 3% would be taken out of the any weapon portion. So if we had a 60% any weapon, 20% muzzleloader, 20% archery, it would be 57% any weapon, and the other 3% of those permits would go to this type of draw.
Has entertained any ideas on how to get families hunting again? I know families are applying for permits, you know, and they'll get one or two permits, but they'll be in opposite units.
Yeah.
You know, has there been some discussion on two to three of a family be able to pull the same unit tags or education or something to help them to get to that point? It's grappling.
Certainly things to explore, and I think we use that exact language that we'll investigate or we'll explore ways to maintain this to ensure that we have that hunting tradition, that family tradition, and the, you know, increasing the group size may be an option as we look at it and go through the data and see if that's something we can propose and get support for. But I think what you're talking about is as we went unit by unit, that was certainly one of the trade-offs. We have more control on who's hunting in a unit, but in so doing, we also may limit some of these families or have longer wait times. So, yeah, it's certainly something on our mind, but I don't know if I have all the answers tonight. So.
Okay, well, I just see, you know, but Kent gave this, you know, we've got a lot of families interested in hunting, but yet we broke up that family tradition.
Can I make a comment on, you know, that this manner problem has went a long ways on this to help this point you're making. Because you can take your grandkid with you, that's just another member of your family. So the mentor problem or program does address that, the mentor program.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, that's actually a really good comment because we've got some really positive feedback already from doing that this year. So you're a very good thought.
Well, it's really family oriented, you know.
Just kind of along those same lines about the mentoring program and families, has there been any discussion about doing kind of a special youth deer hunt similar to the elk?
No, not in this committee. It's not something we discussed. We do things for
you. Maybe not in the committee, but just in management of mule deer here in the elk.
Yeah.
Any discussion about?
One thing we did a couple of years ago, you'll have to remind me how long ago that was. I might need some help. But we allowed for, once the permits were done, youth can obtain up to 20% additional archery permits on these units. So that way, if you have a youth that was extremely interested, didn't draw, that was 3 years ago. So that we've done that for a few years now. That doesn't necessarily help the family or dad or uncle get tags, but at least the youth, the ones that are really interested, passing hunter safety, competing for video game times, things like that. If we can do more, we'll certainly propose it.
Any other questions from the board? Any questions from the public?
Blake Bess here again, dedicated hunter. On your general season limited entry hunt, you're considered on bringing a park. From what I took from the slide before this, most hunters are dissatisfied, and yet we want to start another hunt. Can you go into detail on that, where you're coming from to?
Sure. Yeah, more than happy to. I do want to point out that's just a strategy in the plan. So it's kind of a bigger picture thing. In the next presentation where I give Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime recommendations, we'll get a little bit more into the weeds on the specifics of what we'd like to do with that. But the idea behind it was you looked at the data that camp provided, and people want to hunt as a family. They want to see bigger bucks. They want to see more bucks. They want that opportunity, and there's trade-offs. But then when it came to, well, should we convert limited entry units? No, there's not enough support for that. So what we're, you know, one thing that we get asked all the time is, why don't you guys think outside of the box? I hear that all the time with working for the division. And so this was an idea that we said, okay, we have units throughout the state that are managed for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does. And in some cases, we're closer to 30 bucks per 100 does on some of these units. But because some of these deer are tied up on access issues with private land, different challenges like that, we didn't, you can't just throw more general season permits at it and say we're going to lower the buck to doe ratio, because all you're going to do is lower hunter success rates and increase frustration with hunters. And we didn't feel like that was a fair approach. So this was one where we said we already have a surplus of bucks. They're quality bucks because you're already over 20 bucks per 100 does, so you know you have some mature animals there. And this is a way to allow hunters access to some of these deer to potentially fill that void of not seeing the size of bucks or the number of bucks that they wanted to. So it was something that we went with as the recommendations.
One more question. Is that percent of the tags going to that can be pulled from the pool you already have now, or will you allow additional tags?
No, on this we'll allow additional. And the reason we will is because most of these units that are private land units where we're exceeding this 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, the idea is to provide more opportunity that's a better quality hunt than just a general season and get that buck to doe ratio closer to its objective. When we make recommendations, they have to help get us to our objective. So if we say we're managing for 18 to 20, but we keep climbing 24, 26, 27 bucks per 100 does, this is an avenue to get that buck to doe ratio down. So.
Any other questions?
Yeah, Matt Draper again. I understand if this is accepted, but with the late season muzzleloader hunting on general season units, with the six units that are here, would it ever change? Say a unit went up in count and maybe it later would become a limited entry type hunt? Or
yeah.
Is this a 5-year plan like we've seen here with
yeah.
the six units? Or
so this is really tough, and I struggled to know how to present this, because what I'm presenting tonight in this presentation is just the plan. And so the plan just has that very broad strategy. And what you're talking about with the six individual units and whether we can turn those on or off, that'll be in the next presentation on the Bucks Bulls Once in a Lifetime recommendations for this year. So in this plan, it's pretty broad, and I think I can tackle that better in the next presentation. But to answer your question very quickly, yeah, we will be able to turn them on and off. These are just the six that are exceeding 20 bucks per 100 does that we wanted to start with.
So, I mean, it could, well, like I said, I may have jumped the gun here, but so it could be you might be have in mind, apply for a limited entry muzzleloader type hunt on a general season unit, but maybe the next year it wouldn't exist.
Right.
Depending on what the count would be.
Yeah, exactly, because if our buck to doe ratio comes back down to, say, 18 or 19, then that's something we could shut off and say, okay, we had the opportunity, we took advantage of it with limited entry hunters, and now we can just manage to that 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does with general season hunters. So, yeah.
Any other questions? We need to go on here. I didn't get any comment cards.
Did you do that?
Okay, we need comment cards today. Comments from the rack. Okay. Troy, do you want to give a comment on this item?
Troy Justinson, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. We'd like to thank everybody that participated in putting this plan together. As a whole, we support the plan. We do have a little bit of concern on a few items, and I think Justin will address it. One of which is the, for lack of a better word, what you call it, instead of a premium, the
multi-season. Yeah.
Deal. The thing we have concern, we'd like to limit that to only be available to those people who draw a permit. Certain units like the Book Close, the Ponscon, whatever, there's X amount of landowner tags. We don't want that to apply to those, meaning that if somebody obtains a landowner voucher that they can circle that and they can hunt all three seasons. The reason being, you think back when the dedicated hunter first started, it was allowed to happen on limited entry units. And so it increases the number of hunters, say in the archery, the muzzle, or whatever, dramatically. And really takes away from the experience, and also puts an intense pressure on that top end of deer. So we like it maintained to that 3% and allow it only for those who draw the permit rather than extend it, that benefit to landowner associations. Thank you.
Okay, nothing else. Let's go into item 7, Bucks, Bulls. So do I have a motion on the statewide mule deer management plan?
A motion to accept the plan as presented.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I want to go back to Troy's thing there. So basically, you're asking us to amend it a little bit, right? Or is that just public comment for Shannon to understand and down the road?
And then you're going to have to change it in the rule. And we talked, and Justin probably can address that. It may come up in this next section you talked about.
Correct? Yeah, so I guess where we're at is with the mule deer plan, it's just, can this be a should this be a strategy, yay or nay? Is it something the RAC's comfortable with, the public's comfortable with? As I give the next presentation on bucks, bulls, once-in-a-lifetime recommendations and rule changes, and that's opened up a little bit more, I think that's probably where we can define Troy's concerns a little bit better.
Okay. And I'll second it.
Okay, I have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Opposed? Reason?
I just don't like the idea of adding additional hunts, that late hunt. I feel like we've got too many hunts going already. I just don't like the idea of adding that. If they take that out, I would go fine.
Okay. So noted. Okay. Did you get that vote?
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Gail. Next action item, bucks, bulls, season dates and application timeline.
All right, I think we can get into the weeds a little bit more on this presentation. I'm going to present the bucks, bulls, once in a lifetime rule changes, season dates, and boundary recommendations for 2015. So to begin, I'd like to propose for general season deer hunt dates, similar to last year, except moving all dates one day earlier to avoid a Sunday opener. So archery would occur August 15th through September 11th, muzzleloader September 23rd through October 1st, and any weapon hunt October 17th through the 25th. For general season elk hunt dates, archery spike bull would start August 15th and go through September 4th, and the archery any weapon would be extended through September 11th. On the any weapon hunt, we're recommending dates of October 3rd through the 15th. And the muzzleloader hunt of October 28th through November 5th. What I'd like to do is present statewide recommendations, those recommendations that affect multiple units or regions, and then break it down into a regional recommendation for the five areas throughout the state. Our first recommendation tonight is to provide limited entry deer hunting opportunities on general season units that are exceeding 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does. So these permits would be limited in number, and they would overlap with the muzzleloader elk hunt of October 28th through November 5th, and hunters would have to use muzzleloader hunting equipment. These units would include the Chalk Creek East Canyon and Morgan South Ridge, the Camas, Nine Mile, Pine Valley, Southwest Desert, and Zion units. And this would require update to Rule 657-5, which is our big game rule, which was outlined in your packets. Why I'm on this, I know there will be some conversation, so I guess I should take a little bit more time and explain the whys behind this. In many parts of the state, you look at those units that are included, a lot of those are northern region, private lands, different things like that. And what we're doing is we're growing a lot of bucks on general season units that are managed for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, and we're far exceeding that. And some of these are on private lands, and even if they're not, there's access issues to get to where some of these animals are. And so the idea was, as Kent presented in his PowerPoint, there is a demand for more limited entry hunting opportunities throughout the state. And without necessarily the trade-off of, we're going to convert this general season hunt and take all those opportunity away from people that have family hunting traditions of hunting that unit year after year and converting that to a limited entry, this was a way to think outside the box to get harvest on these bucks that really are over their objective anyways. And it's a good challenge to have, I guess, as a way to look at it. So that's a better justification there. We also want to provide multi-season hunting opportunities on limited entry and premium limited entry deer units. Hunters would be able to hunt archery, muzzleloader, and any weapon seasons, similar to elk and bear, how we have now. The Crawford Mountains and Dolores Triangle, these two limited entry units would be excluded because of the weapon type used or just a very limited number of permits. And again, this would require an update to the big game rule. We're also recommending adding three hunt days to the limited entry muzzleloader elk hunt. Traditionally, this hunt has started on a Wednesday and ended the following Thursday. And what we're recommending is to start it on a Monday and ending it the following Friday and of September 21st through October 2nd, essentially. And what this will allow for is limited entry elk hunters that are using muzzleloader equipment to hunt closer to the rut and give them a few more days in the field, and they wouldn't have that overlap with general season hunters. And if you look at what we do for our limited entry elk hunters, the archers, they get 7 days closest to the rut with no conflict with general season hunters. And then the early rifle hunt, they don't have any competition during their hunt as well. But muzzleloader hunters always have. And so we wanted to give them 2 days closer without that competition so there would be alignment in how we're treating limited entry elk hunters. Another recommendation is to extend season dates on mountain goat hunts. This recommendation will allow for longer, thicker coats on these animals. And the season date extensions, these are in conjunction with access and road closures. So right now, essentially, most of these hunts are ending October 12th this year, I think. And we want to extend those anywhere from October 31st to November 30th. And what we're trying to do is, these aren't arbitrary. What we're looking at is, when does agencies like the Forest Service close their roads? And if it's a November 15th hunt date, that's when we want the season to end. And the reason is we don't want hunters to have the impression that they have more time or access to these animals when they don't. And so it's a way to provide more opportunity hunt day-wise and tackle that challenge that way. So. Let's see, we also recommend updating the big game rule to prohibit the use of drones to take big game. We also want to allow, I see the smirks, I know. We also want to allow unsuccessful limited entry deer and elk archery hunters to hunt extended archery areas. In the past, if you drew the Bookcliffs archery permit and you weren't successful, you couldn't go hunt one of our extended archery units. And we'd like to throw that out there and see if there's interest in allowing for that. We also wanted to correct the clerical error, which clarifies which permits allow a youth to hunt archery, muzzleloader, and any weapon seasons. When we went unit by unit and we made some changes to allow youth to again, as we were talking about earlier, giving youth opportunities. So for instance, if they draw an any weapon permit, they can also hunt archery, muzzleloader, and the rifle hunt. Currently, and there was a lack of alignment with how we implemented that and what our rule says, and so we're just trying to make those mesh to what we're doing. We wanted to add moose to the CWD and importation sections and other minor corrections and clarifications. Moving on to regional recommendations for the southern region, we recommend splitting the Zion Bighorn sheep hunt into an early and a late season to reduce crowding. These will be roughly a month in season length. We also wanted to add a muzzleloader pronghorn hunt to the southwest desert. For the southeast region, we recommend adding an archery hunt for pronghorn on the LaSalle Potash South Cisco unit. For the northern region, we recommend splitting the Newfoundland Mountain Bighorn unit into an early and a late season, each of which are at least 3 weeks. We also recommend adding an extended archery deer area in the West Cache to address urban deer issues. We recommend adding a limited entry deer hunt on the North Slope Summit unit, which is Unit 8A, that runs concurrently with the general season elk hunt. Essentially what this is reestablishing what used to be high country buck hunts. And then on this unit, we have deer that migrate off the North Slope into Wyoming in early October. And what we want to do is allow limited entry deer hunters an opportunity to harvest these bucks while they're still in the state. And so I'd like to propose that tonight. Recommend adding a muzzleloader pronghorn hunt on the Cache, Morgan, South Ridge, and Ogden unit, and then discontinuing the Pilot Mountain bighorn sheep hunt. For the central region, we recommend discontinuing the San Pete Valley extended archery elk hunt because of the conflict of harvesting limited entry bulls with over-the-counter permits. We recommend changing the boundary of the Wasatch Elk Unit to exclude areas that fall within the Wasatch Front Extended Archery Unit. Season dates for the Wasatch Front Extended Archery will run from August 15th through December 15th, so there'll still be opportunities to harvest elk in these areas. And the extended archery area will remain a limited entry unit to allow for spike hunting in Summit County. And then we also recommend slightly altering boundaries of the Okra, Stansbury, and West Desert Deer and Elk units. For the Northeast region, no changes, no new recommendations. And some key dates to keep you aware of for the upcoming season. The big game drawing application time period for bucks, bulls, once-in-a-lifetime, new dedicated hunters, and lifetime license holders will be January 29th through March 5th. And the application period for bonus and preference points and application withdrawal period is extended to March 19th. And results will be posted by the end of May. In addition to that, some key dates for 2015 that we present every year. Hunters with disabilities on general season units. Most of these are simply 5 days prior to the hunt occurring, and in some cases, we give 5 days afterwards. So, and that's all I have, so thank you.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the RAC?
Justin, I kind of question the idea of having that late muzzleloader hunt on 9 Mile. For the hunters that I talk to that are, you know, out there hunting elk and deer both, they're pretty discouraged with the number they're seeing. Where's this count coming from? Apparently they're over objective on the bucks.
Yeah.
Is that on the private ground in the fields or something? Because the general areas that most of the people can hunt, like on Antrim Mountain, it's
right. Yeah, in part, yeah. On a unit like 9 Mile, you can't ignore those private lands because they do carry bucks and have a higher buck-to-doe ratio. And that's one of the reasons of proposing this, is because if you have properties that are large landowners, like CWMUs and different things like that, and they're holding these bucks during the hunting season, and then when the hunts are over, these bucks go back onto public land, they go onto smaller private landowner properties, and there's been some frustrations in the past of, you know, we winter all these deer, but we never get an opportunity to harvest any of them. And so the buck-to-doe ratio on the 9 Mile is real. It's generally between 20 and 25 every year that we classified it. And this is a way to for some of these deer that are harboring on these private lands to come out and to be more available to get that buck-to-doe ratio lower. So.
Okay, one more question. And I get a lot of complaints from about the spike hunt on the archery elk hunt. You know, the archery elk hunt is pretty much before the bugle. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people are setting water, and the people that draw the limited entry tags that have multiple years putting in, you don't have these spike hunters sitting on the water at the same time. And then also it opens up again for those that have drawn the muzzleloader elk hunt. And I just hear a lot of frustration on that. Have you guys looked at changing the dates on those to where we could work around?
Yeah, if I understand you correctly, let's take a look at these. So what we try to do is, if you look at that archery spike bull, the dates are August 15th through September 4th. Mm-hmm. And that way, if you're a limited entry elk hunter, say on the book list or some of these other units, you have those last 7 days closest to the rut that you have for your elk hunt. And so it's a balancing act. There's certainly a demand to have general season elk hunting in the state with spikes, but then also limited entry hunters. I understand their perspective because they're saying, I've waited all these years to draw, yet I'm competing on water holes with general season hunters. And so that's the compromise we made a few years ago. And since we've done that, we've got really good feedback on it. So if you're hearing something different, I would love to hear that perspective.
You know, I really get a lot of complaints from people that are frustrated with spike hunters, you know, when they've drawn the limited entry permits.
Right. Yeah. And this was the balancing act that we tried, and I think it serves us well because spike elk hunters, there's a role for them on these units. It's opportunity, it's general season, but it's not at as the rut starts. They're not competing with those limited entry guys. They're not there.
Any other questions from Rich?
Yeah. I think it was maybe your second or third slide, Justin, where you were talking about late season deer hunts overlapping with the muzzleloader elk hunt.
Mm-hmm.
On those units that exceeded, So those are, would those be muzzleloader deer hunts then?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You would have to use muzzleloader equipment as well.
Thanks.
And as we talked about this in the committee, there was a lot of good discussion on this because there was some uneasiness of saying, well, how do we get these? How do we lower buck to doe ratios on these units that we can't do it through traditional permits as we've done? And there was an appetite to hunt them in the peak of the rut, and so we thought. And with a rifle. So we thought, well, maybe if we moved it early November with the muzzleloader, there would still be an appetite for that. And as we looked at it, you look at our CWMU program right now, they get to hunt deer till November 10th with a rifle. And so even though we're extending these into November, it's still not the same opportunity as they're getting. It's a muzzleloader, and the season date ends earlier. And so we're already doing this on many areas throughout the state. This is just a way to allow the public hunter that same opportunity. So.
Yeah. So you're proposing the 3% that go to that be a separate hunt number that people would apply for individually? Or how would they, your comment was after they're successful,
you would like different issues.
Sorry, the 3% is the multi-season permit, whether they can hunt archery, muzzleloader, and any weapon all at the same time. This is adding a fourth hunt.
Totally separate. Any other questions from the rack? Okay, any questions from the public?
Blake Bess again, dedicated hunter. We go back a couple years ago when we switched up the general units into a whole bunch of different little units to basically see to where we could get, oh, this unit's a little bit better, this unit's not quite so better. But as with this new hunt you propose of keeping it down to an 18 to 20 buck, I just don't see this happening where we get a little bit better unit, slam it with this new hunt, and basically all the units in the state are going to be get down to basically an all general unit like it used to be, just four general units. Could you explain your reasoning on the discrepancy between all the little units and now we're going to slam this new hunt on there? Now we ain't going to get better proposed units. Kind of get where I'm going?
Let me take a stab at it, and if I don't get there,
go ahead.
Correct me and ask it again, I guess. The way I look at this is when we put sideboards on buck to doe ratios, we always have a bottom and a top. So in this case, it's 18 to 20. On limited entry, it's 25 to 35. And if we had units that were constantly at 15 bucks per 100 does, and we should have been managing them for 18 to 20, there would be a demand to cut permits so that we can get to that 18 to 20 range. Is that fair?
Yeah.
So what we have is a lot of units in the state that are exceeding 20 bucks per 100 does. And what we would normally do is just say, well, let's throw more general season permits at it. And we could try that. But because there's only so much public land on some of these units and there's only so much access that can be had, what we don't want to do is frustrate our hunters to the point where they're seeing more hunters and no deer and they feel like we're selling them camping trips instead of great hunting experiences. And so what we're trying to do is think outside the box and say, if these are our sideboards of 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, we know we have to increase harvest in order to get there. And this is just one proposal that we have to do it. I mean, we could certainly try to increase permits through the general draw. We just don't feel like that would be in the best interest of our public hunters. So, and don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to convince you or anyone else that this is the best idea ever, but it is a way for us to try to get within the sideboards of the plan that we have. So.
I'd just like to comment, I don't know how much harder we can hunt our general deer. I mean, we hunt them from first August to the end of November, I usually.
Okay, any other questions from the public? Questions, no comments.
It's no, not a question.
Okay, a lot of comment sheet, these items. Okay, comments from the rack. Okay, no comments from the rack. Okay.
I really like their plan. I'd like to talk to the RAC about a concern of mine of adding these late muzzleloader hunts. I agree with Blake what he said. There's just no more hunts on these general deer. I think that they need a break. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Troy, you had a comment card?
Troy Justice and the Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. As a whole, we support the division's recommendations for once-a-lifetime bucks and bulls with an addition of a couple of things. We addressed it in a couple of the other racks, but we have an expanding moose population that's going on to the Manti and the Nebo. And currently that's out of a hunt unit and kind of the southern boundary of where the moose ideal habitat is. We'd ask you as a RAC to address expanding the Wasatch hunt unit, the moose, to allow hunters to go into these units and hunt the moose on the Manti and the Nebo. The other thing we'd like to be addressed is, as we deal with these split seasons like on the Zion, we've got a split season down here on the 9 Mile for sheep. We'd ask that the division go back in. Right now, I believe it's, 15 days?
Yeah.
And we'd like come up with a different idea that talked with Justin a couple of days ago, that we still keep it a split, but what we do is we start the first hunt, say 8 days before the second hunt, but then allow all of them to hunt together rather than limiting them to just 15 days. Where this is a once-in-a-lifetime deal for these people, they're feeling a little bit of pressure with just 15 days to go hunt these bighorn sheep. You know, for instance, if you float the river, you're going to burn up about 11 days just in that, and if you're not successful, it only leaves you a few days to go somewhere else. The other thing we'd like the RAC to address is that of the 3%, that make sure that is limited only to those people that draw, that it's not available to landowners. Dill, Rod, with what you're talking about on this additional hunt, personally I'm in favor of it. Now I have a partner in leasing Chalk Creek, and really what the division is doing is targeting these deer that aren't accessible to us average Joes. These deer are basically on private property all summer long. Then as winter comes, they move off. And I'm in favor. And anything we can do to increase the opportunity for the average Joe to get in there and hunt these is good. And we just make sure that we don't over-harvest it. But I think it's a good idea and actually give a benefit to hunt these deer that come off these private places. Otherwise, we have no access to. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have comments. We have questions and comments covered. And now we need...
We got one more comment.
Okay,
sorry.
Got a comment. That's fine.
Good. Go ahead.
My name is Matt Draper. Again, I'm just going to kind of add to what Blake had said.
State your name, if you will.
Matt Draper.
Thanks, Matt.
With this extended archery, the limited entry, unsuccessful deer and elk hunters being able to come on to the extended archery and hunt. For instance, my hometown, my backyard, 9A South Slope Yellowstone, I don't think our buck to doe is there already, and a lot of these deer that are being hunted are deer that have migrated into the private and the extended area, and I just want to say they're out there taking enough, and just to have that much more, I just don't think it's a good thing.
Appreciate that comment. Okay, we have a motion.
Wait.
Yes.
I've got a comment. I guess it's kind of a recommendation. It has to do with harvesting bighorn sheep. And so my recommendation is that the language be added into the part of the rule or where we're in the management, that that would prohibit the harvesting of collared bighorn sheep in Unit 8, Flaming Gorge and the Hoop Lake herd. And I say that because of all the investment that both federal agency and the state have put into trying to better understand that population and to allow hunters to harvest these collared bighorn sheep, I think kind of sets us back in terms of what we're trying to accomplish and better understand there.
Tim, I got one more.
I'd like to see that done on the 9 mile area too, because the tribes got sheep down into their collar too, and they also go off the tribal lands and, you know, venture into your guys' site. You know, it takes a lot of money to put those collars on those animals.
Okay.
Dax, do you have any concerns or?
I guess from the concern with collared sheep, you know, anytime we radio collar animals, you know, if we're trying to gauge survival information, then we kind of bias our study if we prohibit, you know, the harvest of those animals. In some circumstances, like on Unit 8, you know, we really are, you know, we're kind of at an important juncture with bighorn and domestic sheep management in that area, and having good information on location is really important, and it has been a large investment in that area. And I understand where Dan's coming from with this comment. It's not something I have thought about or really looked into yet, but I definitely think it's something worth thinking about. So, and we haven't talked about that or anything yet, but it's, I understand the concern.
The only concern I have, if I can even speak to this, is sometimes we radio collar animals and the radio collar fails, and so it's not transmitting anyways. Sure. And so at that point, you could just have animals that are, especially with VHF collars, which is what we've done with a lot of our sheep. I mean, there's certainly things we can do. If we want to send letters, you know, that's something Dax and I can work on, and send these sheep hunters letters talking about the investment that we put in trying to obtain this information and how difficult it was to radio collar some of these on Wilderness. And that's something we can put together and work with you on. We'd have to have further discussions, because I don't know how many collars you might have out there that have failed, and then hunters are passing up rams that aren't giving us information anyway. So
that recommendation was made in the a couple nights ago at the Northern Region RAC, and this is just, I guess, information for this RAC. Same recommendation was made and it was passed a couple nights ago. Was that right, Justin?
Yeah, it would have been last week. And the Forest Service representative had very similar concerns that we've gone to great lengths, and so that RAC did pass that we would have language for the North Slope that prohibited the harvest of rams on that unit. So
for the Flaming Gorge Hoop Lake first.
Yes.
Okay. Call for a motion.
I just have another question. How does the division feel about Troy's proposal for the moose as far as expanding on Manta and Nebo?
Troy has some good points. There are moose that are on the Nebo unit and on the Manti unit. That population has never really taken off and blossomed, and so there's no way it could be a standalone hunt. But if we had hunters that were hunting the Wasatch and knew of a good bull down on the Manti, that's something we could do, because we're not having cow moose hunts on these units anyways. It's just bulls. One of the concerns that was brought up last night was, what if there's not a lot of males down there? What if that population is trying to progress and they're having a hard time males being in that area? That was the only counter argument. But if the RAC wanted to extend that, we could certainly make it work. So.
I'll make a motion that we approve it as it is, with the idea that we do what Troy's asked us to do as far as the sportsman's goes, as far as the Mount Nebo and the Manti on the elk, and the 3% limited to the draw to people that actually draw and not landowner tax.
The expansion of the moose, not the elk, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Moose.
Okay.
Thank you.
It's a multi-species cat.
Justin was worried.
Okay, do I have a second?
Good.
I second that. Okay, Rod seconds it.
I'm sorry, who is the motion?
You want to repeat the motion?
Who is the second?
Rod.
Rod.
Okay. All in favor? Okay. 3-4. Any opposed?
Was me too, baby.
No opposed. So we were unanimous, and I didn't see all the hands?
0.
8-0. Okay.
I have a question. Did that include the additional days for sheep? Or did we not want to address that?
What was the 3% you were talking about?
That was for the permits for deer.
For the permits.
Not okay. Be available for the landowners. That's good. That's okay. Yeah. And then you've got the expanded for the moose. We didn't. Nobody said anything about the days for sheep. Troy brought up a request that we look at additional days for sheep.
For sheep with
on those. And I mean, it's up to the RAC to address that if they want to, or they can just, it's already passed, I guess, but.
That'd be would it be additional motion?
Could be.
Yeah. Could it?
I guess a comment on, river running. You know, if they chose to river run, that's a choice that you have to make as a hunter. And I've done both as a river runner and a hunter, because you are taking up time as you go to run the river. That's your transportation, and that's some of the days you're going to lose 4 days because you got to get through that reach of river. So you've got other days to go hunt. It's just a comment. Some of the decisions you have to make. You can hunt on land and go hunt a sheep, and you've got days to get where you're going, or horses, or some other method.
I think the only thing with that 9 mile and that would bring it more in line with what we're offering on other, like on the Zion, is 2 30-day seasons. And on the new fees, it's over 20 some odd days. This is the shortest of all.
This is the shortest.
Yeah. But whatever the RAC wants.
Well, okay, do we have another motion then?
Well, yeah, I guess I would make another motion then, that we accept what has been proposed. I think was that Randy that proposed that? And add in the language about prohibiting the harvest of collared bighorn sheep on Unit 8, Hoop Lake and Plenty Orchard. And I don't know.
I would like to see it done also on the 9 mile unit. Because, like I said, we got sheep in there too. And that takes you aboard or a collar. I would have to speak up for the tribe, because Horace Venture over there also.
Yeah.
Can I ask, how many radio collars do you guys have on rams right now?
I am not actually sure, but I know there is probably 10 sheep.
Is it sheep or rams?
Well, they got the rams. I think it's all rams.
Okay.
So, Jeremy Kidd would be the one to be able to answer all of those questions for you. Yeah, I know he does a lot of collaring for you guys, too.
Does a division typically collar a percentage of rams and percentage of females, or is there?
Yeah, it depends the purpose of why we're putting collars out there in the first place. Generally, we collar rams if we're interested in movement, and mostly females if we're interested in survival of the population. And again, I might have some concerns in the sense that I'm not sure if we have, I'd have to check with the Southeast region to see if they have any radio collared rams that aren't transmitting. Because then we have hunters that could harvest these animals. There's only one. Maybe it's not that big of a deal then on this unit if it's only one. So, I'll go ahead.
If I may, another thing, I think, especially in the Unit 8 right now, even if it was a temporary thing for a few years, maybe we said, okay, we're not going to harvest any collar sheep for the next few years until we can get some good data. Maybe not a permanent thing forever, we don't harvest collar sheep. in case we get to that point where we, you know, potentially have a nice ram that would be available to hunters that has a collar that's no longer transmitting. But I think, you know, in light of what we've done there and the information we're trying to gather, you know, at least for a temporary basis, I think, you know, we could probably live with something like that in the Daggett County area. I can't speak the 9 mile, so.
Okay, so Dan's motion, I don't have a second on it, but let's clarify it.
So, just simple, you know, prohibit the harvest of collared bighorn sheep in Unit 8, that's the Flaming Gorge and Hoop Lake herds, so.
For like 2 years, 3 years, you're gonna...
Well, just, you've got a year at a time, maybe, it could be for this year, and then you can address it.
If you've got a request to also include Unit 9.
Unit 9, also, next to the tribe.
Eleven, right.
Can I ask the DWR question? Dax, you guys act to me like you really don't care. Like you really don't want it, but you kind of do. Do you want this or not?
I guess I just haven't had a chance to think it through yet. There's pros and cons to it, you know. And I can't speak to the 9 mile, but for Daggett County, I think it makes sense. I think what Dan is saying makes sense. I don't want to say forever, let's never harvest a collared sheep again, but for the next few years, I think it makes sense. But it's a little of a surprise. I hadn't had a chance to really think it through.
I have had some time to think about it because this was proposed a week ago. And Dax is right. There's just trade-offs. It's not necessarily do we want it or do we not want it. If we go this route, one of the concerns we have is that hunters go out there, they hit the dirt hard for many, many weeks and say what they see is a mature ram. With a radio collar, or a six-year-old ram with the radio collar, and that's what they see, and they've waited all these years to draw that permit. So that's the one end of the pendulum where we have to look at this as to what's best for our hunters and our sportsmen. The other end is that the Forest Service has some difficult decisions to make, and the more data that we can provide jointly, I think, is a really healthy thing. And it took a lot of time and energy and effort to get some of these collars on them. It was a chore, wasn't it? So that's kind of where we struggle with it is, you know, when we look at it from a hunter's perspective, it's probably not the best thing. But when we look at it from a data collection and a management decision-making perspective, then it's something we can certainly live with.
So basically what you want to do is say, we didn't propose this, that dang rack did.
No, we're not trying to get out of blame one way or the other.
Then we'll give out your phone number.
But you're right. It isn't something that we proposed. But that's what the public process is for. We can live with it either way. So.
Yeah. Comment, Boyd? Yeah, and that's what I'd say. This is a public process. That's what we're doing. So we've got information exchanging. Okay, I have a motion. I need a second. Tim,
is it clarified for both units?
Did they put a time limit on it?
Both units. Unit 11?
8 and
11.
Were you
going to
put a time limit on it?
I think on a year-to-year, you know, well, some of those collars just went out this fall. So, I would think, you know, short-term. I don't know that I'd put a year or two but, you know.
How long do these collars usually last?
How do you know which ones are out?
You know, this is a real concern. We do not want to take opportunity away from our sportsmen to take some of these sheep if we do have a radio goes out. This has been a kind of a surprise recommendation that we haven't had the opportunity to discuss. And it might be good if we... We're asked to take a look at it and take a look at both regions and find out if there are radio collars, that one that are out or two that might be going out soon, and that'll give us an idea of where we need to come down on that so that we're coming down on a safe side or, you know, if it's going to meet what we need to do as a managing agency. You know, that's like I say, this was a surprise, and I think we would like to have a chance to really delve into it and see what the effects are going to be. Because we don't want to take opportunity away from our sportsmen.
So we want to make it as a recommendation, we want to make it as a motion and vote on it.
You have thoughts?
I have a motion on the table and a second.
I want to make a motion and have a vote on it. At this time,
we have a motion. So all in favor of your motion? Okay.
Let's get the wording one more time.
So.
Go ahead, say it again.
Yep, say it again.
Okay. Yeah, it's the motion would be to prohibit harvest of bighorn, collared bighorn sheep on Unit 8 and Unit 11 in this region.
But doesn't that also, your motion include as presented, plus with the recommendations of...
No, I think it's a standalone motion.
It's an addition to what we've already talked about. It's a new motion. It's a new motion. It's a separate issue.
Yeah, it's a separate issue. Okay, all in favor? 2, 3. Okay, opposed?
3, 5.
Who's opposed?
Okay. Motion doesn't pass.
What date were you opposed to?
Opposed.
Okay. Any other motions or recommendations from the RAC?
Okay.
So let's go to item 8. This is Lindsay Barney. Big game preference points recommendation. Okay. Guys, be nice. Lindy's one of our top notch people in Salt Lake.
Gee, thanks.
I didn't really know this.
Hey. I was there.
I forgot you guys don't have my updated one. Does it work?
It works, but it'll come up as something out of Salt Lake, which is one of the things, rather than your thing. But it's, give it a little bit of time and okay. It should be there.
Sorry.
Is that telling you it's looking for your...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wait till that goes down. Okay, now go up on the right side and open up the files over there. And then it should be the F drive.
This one right here?
Yeah, just click on it. What's it telling you? Hasn't read it yet.
While this is loading, does anybody need a pit stop?
Be a great opportunity. Mine will take forever.
Just close that out and give it a chance to reread it.
Did you open it?
Yours should be on there. If it's not, then we'll have to do the same thing. But I think it's on there.
Okay, now it should be there, right?
Yeah, now it's saying ready to use.
It's freezing stuff down.
The only thing that's different is the fonts and a little less loading in the pros and cons, but I'll send it to you. But it's the concept of itself is the same.
Okay, try closing it again and then opening it.
I think there's a It just takes a little bit.
If it's not there on F, check under G. That's still not doing it. That's the F drive again.
Okay.
We got one of those. Do the same thing.
How much really if you stay there, they'll get
one
the
ticket right away and the other did some mistakes. No, it's see this stuff here. This is all the junk that comes in from Salt Lake.
Yeah.
And it's looking for it, it just never finds it.
I have all that junk stuff.
So if he puts in, does his resident points still count? Do you think? So if he's got 18 points, he's still got 50. But it just costs him more money to come in.
I told him you've been around as long as the division.
Yeah, looking for a guy.
My name is Lindy Barney. I'm the Wildlife Licensing Specialist out of the Salt Lake office, and I'm here to present a change to our general season preference point draw to our general season deer. So I first want to start off by giving you the definition of what a preference point is, so we kind of get a general idea. So preference points are designed to allow all applicants to draw a general season deer permit every few years. It works the best when there are more permits available in larger areas, and also there are no waiting periods involved with the preference point draw. So as now that we kind of understand what they are, here's the background of our preference points. They began in 2000, and a point was earned if you were unsuccessful for any choice, and you lost your points if you were successful in on any hunt choice. This process was changed in 2009. It changed to that a point was earned if you were unsuccessful for your first choice only, and you didn't lose your points if you drew out on your second through fifth choice. The reason for this change was actually to help reduce our remaining permits from the draw that would be sold over our counter, and also to help remove potential for our system crashing due to the high demand that people would go on and try to get those permits, and to fairly distribute our permits through the draw. So I kind of want to show you the trend over the last few years of our leftover DARE permits. So back in 2006, we actually had a little over 26,000 permits remaining. And each year from there, we did slightly drop. But as you can see, in 2009, when we made that change, we went down to 8,646 permits. We actually almost cut our permits in half from the year before. And then from each year, we dropped by a few thousand from that time. As you can see, in 2012, we did have a little spike in leftover permits, and we believe that's due to the change of the 30 units when we before we only had the five regions. And then from there, we actually dropped remaining permits. I'd like to point out that in 2013 was actually our first year ever not to have any rifle tags left over from the draw, and that actually was again this year in 2014. So the change that we made in 2009 gave us the results that we are striving for to help reduce the remaining permits, get the permits into the public's hand in a fairly manner, and to also remove the potential of our system having issues. So I kind of wanted to show you how our draw went this year, and how our applicants applied. This year we had 127,142 applicants just in our general season draw. 47% of our applicants actually only applied for one hunt choice. So that means they applied for one unit, one certain weapon type, and if they didn't draw that unit, they actually didn't want to go to a different unit, or they would obtain a permit somewhere else. And then 21% of our applicants applied for two hunts only. 12% applied for only three different hunt choices. 5% applied for four different units, and 15% applied for all five that we allowed them to choose. So as you can see, 53% of our public actually choose two units, two hunt choices or more in our drawing. So based on that, and actually based on some concerns that have been expressed to us by the public over our current preference point system, the division recommends a change so that all preference points are lost if a hunter is successful for any hunt choice. I want to take a minute and kind of explain what the concern is and what we've been hearing that's been coming into our office, is that the hunters have been calling us expressing that hunters are drawing out on the preferred unit and also being rewarded with a preference point for next year. So they didn't think that was fair. And so this one change that we're making to the draw system will address that concern, that hunters can't draw a preferred unit and then also get a point. But with this recommendation, there are some considerations that we need to take into account. One of them would be, if we did make this change, it would make all of our preference point draw systems run the same. So like your antlerless, your sandhill crane, grass and swan are actually right now, if you draw on your second choice for those, you would lose your points. It also would resolve the concerns that hunters draw a preferred unit and also be being rewarded with a preference point. We may have remaining permits over the counter. If it goes through, we're not quite sure because we don't know how the public would start applying if they did lose their points on their second choice, which could in turn make more pressure on the sales system and make longer lines for those permits through our agents and our regional offices. We would need to re-educate our public to let them know that if you draw out on your second through fifth choice, you would lose your points because it is different. There would be some reprogramming to the draw, which is no big deal because we do it for all of our other ones. And then also some may think that hunters have lost his or her preference on what hunt or weapon type they want to hunt their general season permit. Also, I am recommending a housekeeping changes to R67-62. That is our application rule. In there, we have statewide archery in one of them. We actually no longer have any statewide archery permits. It was just missed when we changed to the 30 units. And also adding convention to waiting period section, where it talks about if you draw on a convention permit, you don't get a waiting period on the limited entry hunts. And that's been going since the convention was opened. And that's how it was just missed in one little part of it. Other than that, I want to thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Denny. Questions from the rack?
I guess you got a probably something from the I think it was the Central Region that the Bowman Association, Ben Lauder, mm-hmm. presented. Tell us how the division feels about that.
Well, what I talked to Ben about and what went through the Central Region is kind of I need to read the central minute notes from the RAC, what was actually recommended and approved versus what Ben Lauder's talking about, because what he explained to me was different than what I got out of it. What Ben is recommending is having everyone's first choice evaluated first within that point group, that point section. So everyone with 4 points, would their first choice would be evaluated first. Then everyone with 3 points, their first choice would be evaluated first. And then second, people with 2 points would be evaluated, all their first choices. And then we would go to the 4 point category again and look at everyone's second choice. That's what Ben said that Central Region recommended. That's not what the division got out of it in the when we were there. What we got out of it was they were looking to do like a limited entry draw where we evaluate everyone's first choice. And you just got to draw a number for how many points you had. So like I said, I need to read over the minutes and maybe talk to Carl myself and find out what he was intending in that proposal.
Okay. Yeah, I've got Ben's email here that we'll put into the record. But the way he was talking about it was random number generation and going to the second draw, and it's very confusing.
So I kind of, let me explain to you guys. So currently, this is how our general season draw order works, just so you kind of got a grasp, is that if you look at that graph, currently right now, let's say 4 points is the max points for going into the preference point system. We will look at everyone's first choice first, and then their second choice, then their third choice, and their fourth choice, and fifth choice. And then we drop down to the three-point category. But within that four-point category, oh, this one doesn't have it. That's why I have the, it wouldn't load up my new presentation.
Oh, that's the old one.
So
this one right here, this tells me that if I've got 4 points, I haven't actually had a general season deer tag for 4 years, right? So then I could put something down in my first choice, and if I don't draw it, then and I have a second choice, then I've got 4 points as a second in the area that I wanted to draw as my second choice. And so I might be able to draw it.
Correct.
Because I've got max points in that. I should be, you know, maybe Dave's got 2 points and I should draw it ahead of Dave.
The preference point system is trying to get people to draw every few years. So we want them to get the people with the most points out of the system first. So the one slide that I don't have is the 4 points things. We look at everyone's first choice first already within that category. Then we go to their second choice within 4 points. And look at all their second choices. And then we go to the third choice within that 4 point range and look at all their choices and so on. And then we drop down to the 3 points. But the intention of the preference point is if you put in for 4 years, you should draw out first before someone that's put in for 2 years. Yes.
Any other questions for the RAC?
I got a question. So the preference points, are they similar? You have like 4 chances then to draw your first choice?
You get 4 random draw numbers, and then we take the lowest random draw number and put that in.
Okay. So it's like the bonus points.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that part is the same.
Okay. Any other questions for the RAC? Okay, any questions for the public? Question
of the public. Daniel Davis, just representing myself. Could you use the same example to explain what Ben proposed?
So what Ben was talking about, what we would do is we look at everyone with 4 points and look at their first choice, and then we drop, the arrow would go downwards, and we look at 3 points, first choice, and then everyone with 2 points, first choice. And then the 1 point, their first choice. And then everyone with 0 points, their first choice. And then we'd go back up to the second choice of the max point guys and look at all their second choices. So that's the way that Ben emailed. So this is, if you look at this graph, this is the limited entry draw order, but it'd be essentially like this. We go down, then up, down, and up. But these draw numbers would be points instead of draw numbers.
So then you don't technically draw first choice till it's empty and then regroup everybody with their second choice and then redraw those Am I making sense?
They still have the same application number, the same draw number, when they went back up to the 4 points and looked at the second choice. Is that kind of what you're asking for?
Not really. What I was wondering is if I asked for a first choice point,
mm-hmm.
and that's the issue here, is that hunters are being passed over by somebody on their second choice draw because they had, say, 2 points, but somebody that draws as a second choice. I was just wondering if they gave them all the first choices out first, and then whatever was left over, they regrouped everybody that chose that unit as a second choice to draw out of that pool.
Mm-hmm.
Versus...
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Not off of a point system alone.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but that's currently we don't do that, but it's definitely a thought that we could think of and think of what it would could do to the draw.
Okay, any other questions for the public? Okay. Comments by the RAC? Any comments?
It's kind of a hard thing because if you haven't hunted for 4 years, and you know you decide okay in 2019 I want to hunt and I want to hunt where I want to hunt, and I haven't happened, so I don't hunt for the next few years so that I can hunt then, and then I only get a choice. My first choice is really going to be my best chance if you're only going to go with the first choice ones. But if you go, I can understand the division if you're rolling those points over to each the next ones, how that would work for me in my case. But if I'm somebody that every second year or third year I want to try to draw my tag, then I kind of like what Ben's proposing because that's would might benefit me better in that position. So it's kind of a tough one.
You know, this is a public concern. You know, the division is pretty comfortable with the draw system right now as it stands. But like Justin presented earlier, is from the Mule Deer plan to investigate new opportunities and new ways for the draw to work over that plan. So we are going to be doing that as well. So we wanted to take us out and address the one concern that's out there right now and then investigate new ways to do the draws.
Any comments at all from the RAC? Okay. We have comments from the public. I have one comment card here from Troy.
Troy Justin, Sports Fish and Wildlife. First, like to thank Lindy. She has done a great job trying to educate big, slow people like me, and she's done a good job. As far as Division Sports Fish and Wildlife goes, we don't support the recommendation from the division. We think it's going to do two things. First off, it's going to have a huge impact on our youth. We've had several people tell us that, you know, hunting's a family tradition. They generally have one spot they want to go. And so they put into that spot, and then they use those other choices. Well, because we still want to hunt, maybe we'll put those in and go. But if we take that away to where they're going to lose their points, they're not going to put their kids in for that. And so they're going to go years and years, because if they did, they're going to really go back the end line, and it just prolongs the time for them to really draw where they want to hunt. So that is one of our concerns. And then the other thing is what we'd recommend is that everybody's, like Ben pointed out, that everybody's first choice be awarded first, and then if you draw your second, third, fourth, fifth choice, that you do not lose your preference point. So we support the recommendation from the UA. We'll do it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. There's even another spin here from Mike Peterson, comment here. When the point system first started, he thought he could get a moose, and then as he thought about it, he knew he was going to get old and not be able to hunt a moose, so he wanted to hunt a sheep, and then he goes on, I'm kind of paraphrasing this, but he was wondering why we can't cater to old-timers like we have been the younger crowd. I have grandkids that love to go with grandpa and hunting sheep, goats, buffalo, moose. What I'm proposing is that when you reach 55 years old, you can combine all your once-in-a-lifetime points and put them on one of the once-in-a-lifetime permits. I also think when you reach 55, you should be able to put all your points toward an antelope, elk, deer. Please respond.
So that's the emails that I received. So, and then Ben Lauder's email is here also. So we'll make sure those are. Move for a motion from the board. There's a rat. Not the board.
Russ.
I make a motion to accept the preference point recommendations as presented. The U thing, I believe that there is a certain amount of percentage that goes to the U. So therefore, I feel like they are not left out.
Yeah, we give them 20%.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Okay. Motion and second, and all in favor. Unanimous.
I'll vote. I was trying not to make up my mind. I couldn't. But I didn't want to stay in either, so. I know.
Okay, it is a unanimous vote.
I know.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Lemire.
Thank you.
Okay. Scott McFarland, CWMU.
Do you have that drive?
Did you change yours?
The right one's the right ones on the thumb drive.
So the one that came from Salt Lake was the right one.
Okay.
Let's hope it works.
And I can make it work. I have people to hope. Is it this one?
You see, it hasn't been showing up. I don't know why.
We're going to try this again and have the same problem. If not, I'll make the other one work.
No, it's trying to read Salt Lake.
He did. I remember the joke he gave me.
I lost everybody.
Scott, go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm Scott McFarland. I'm the Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator.
There. We have some everybody quiet so we can listen.
Oops, I'm sorry. I've got to go.
This evening I will be presenting the 2015 Buck and Bull CWMU and Landowner Association recommendations. Every year we receive three types of applications for the CWMUs. We have new applications, and they are just that. They're new to the program, never have applied, but also falling in that new category, are CWMUs that have change their acreage or their land ownership greater than 34%. That kicks them into a new category. There's renewal applications. CWMUs are currently on a three-year plan where they renew their application and management plans every 3 years. And we had quite a few of those this year. And we have change applications. Each year, the CWMUs can apply by August 1st for any change in their applications. And things that have to go through the rack and the board, or any change in permit numbers, or the permit allocation, or the private-public ratio of permits, or any change in season dates. So for 2015, we received 17 new applications. For 2015, we received 17 new applications. Four were due to land ownership changes that are greater than 34%, where they either increased or decreased their acreage. There's 13 brand new applications. One application was withdrawn, the Milford East Bend CWMU, and one application has a DWR recommendation to deny, and I'll explain that. We had 82 CWMUs that submitted renewal application. This was the big year. Most of them were up for renewal for the 2015 through 2017 period. Three CWMUs submitted change applications requiring RAC and board approval, and two CWMUs did not reapply or were dropped from the program. A total of 102 applications were submitted for this 2015 season. Which would bring, if all of those were approved, the total of statewide CWMUs to 126. And just as a breakdown by regions, Northern Region has the majority of the CWMUs at 76, Northeastern has 6, Central 13, Southeastern 19, and the Southern 12. And what this represents, there's over 2.26 million acres enrolled in the CWMU program, of which 96.5% is private land. They have a little over 606 private landowners participate in the CWMU program. Okay, just as an overview, generally this is for all the CWMUs. We're recommending 1,963 private buck deer permits and 261 public buck deer permits. There's two management private buck deer permits are recommended and one public permit. Bull elk would have 931 private permits and 140 public permits. Buck pronghorn, 87 private permits and 64 public permits. And bull moose would be 43 private permits and 41 public permits, for a total of 3,026 private permits that would go to the CWMUs, and 507 public permits, which represents 14.3% of all the permits that are allocated. I'm going to go through the... Sorry. Give me just a sec here. I'm going to go through the regional recommendations through each region, and I'm not going to read all of these. You've been provided in your RAC packets several handouts that explain the specific numbers for all the CWMUs, and I'll highlight some of the things that need to have action on them, but I'll just pause on the slide, and rather than go through and read all these, I'll probably go through your region a little bit. more in detail. But for the northern region, they had eight new applications. Six of those were brand new, and two of those were because they decreased acreage greater than 34%. And the division recommends approval of all of these new applications for the northern regions. These northern region renewal applications continued, or renewal applications is the beginning of them. These are the ones that were at the end of their three-year approval period, and they needed to renew. And so these are ones that are going to be renewed for another 3 years. The division recommends approval of all of these. What the changes are on there, all of the CWM, by rule, when they renew their applications, it requires that we identify any changes from the previous applications. So the changes part is the basic changes that they made from their previous application. The division recommends approval of all those. These are the northern region renewal applications continued. What's highlighted in yellow are the CWMUs that have requested extended bull elk season variances. And they go from anywhere from November 10th to November 30th, in addition to the regular season they have. Those would be Deseret, CWMU, East Fork of Chalk Creek, and Ensign Ranches on this page. We recommend approval of all those. These are northern regions renewal applications continued. State Corner CWMU is requesting a bull elk season variance from September 1st to November 20th. We recommend approval of all of these. And the last of the renewal applications for Northern Region is Weber Florence Creek is also requesting a bull elk season extension variance. Okay, the Northern Region had several change applications. Two of these will require action on. Grouse Creek is just a name change. I put it up there to just inform the public that it's no longer going to be Grouse Creek. They want to change their name to the Riverview Ranch LLC, CWMU. Junction Valley had a pretty significant change. It was not quite 34%, but they added 6,641 acres. Pine Canyon requires rack and board action. They wanted to increase their buck deer permits from 20 total with a 18 and 2 split to 30 total with a 27 and 3 split. That's 27 and private and 3 public permits. Woodruff Creek South, the recommendation on this, they decreased their acreage by 4,208 acres. Somebody else came in and leased their property from them. But they still have enough to have a CWMU for deer, elk, and moose. They're still well over the 10,000 acres. But what it did was left one of their sections separated from the CWMU, which made it a non-compliant piece. So what they did is they requested a variance, went through. We have a process we go through the CWMU Advisory Committee. Have a regional recommendation, and the recommendation from the CWMU Advisory Committee. This was just done yesterday, and the CWMU Advisory Committee recommended that they grant the variance to them through the duration of their three-year plan. 2014 was the first year, so they would go through 2017 and have to reapply for the variance and find ways to make that acreage contiguous again, or else it is not going to stay in the CWMU. That was the recommendation from the advisory committee. Southeastern region new applications, there's four of those. One of them that has another variance that was requested. This is the Jump Creek CWMU. They went through the process, through the regional recommendation, through the advisory committee recommended approval with certain conditions. This is a 7,500 acre elk CWMU. It was part of the Schofield East CWMU. It went through the committee. They recommended that they approve that with conditions also that it basically it's the same thing as the Woodruff Creek South, except for this is a under acreage instead of a non-contiguous. They recommend approval with the condition that that they work to get the additional, I guess it's 2,500 to 3,500, the additional acreage to bring it up to the 10,000 acre minimum in 3 years. If they can't, they have to come in and reapply for a variance with the committee. And they have to also have a satisfaction rating of at least 4, which is pretty high. With their hunters, and after maintain at least a 15% antlerless elk harvest rate on the CWMU. So they recommended approval with those conditions.
Scott, is that the one that was larger that got smaller?
It was part of the Schofield East. It was part of the Schofield East CWMU. It was larger. Part of the conditions on this was the Schofield. This is where the majority of the elk were harvested, was on this portion of the CWMU, and that was part of the reason for recommending approval of it. So, but it was a larger CWMU. The Schofield East CWMU is still in operation. This is just a part of it that split off. So. Southeastern Region Renewal Applications, this is all of them. We recommend approval of all these. Hiawatha, CWMU requestable elk season variance from September 1st to go to it, November 30th. We recommend approval of that. The renewal applications, this is the last of them for Southeastern Region. Southern Region new applications, there was two of them. There's the East Zion, it's a new one. The division recommends denial of this application. They were using some state trust lands to make up their minimum acreage. The state lands didn't qualify under our rule. The public did have access to it. It also made part of the CWMU non-contiguous, which decrease the acreage even further below the 4,945. So we were recommending denial of that application. Milford East Bench withdrew their application. They had some issues with contiguous acreage. They needed another year to try and get the properties put together. So they withdrew that application. Southern Region renewal applications are these. Booby Hole requested elk season variance, and Overman Plateau both requested an extended elk season variance. We recommend approval of all of these. And Central Region new application, Crab Creek is the only new application they had. It's a new, but it's been a previous CWMU in 2010. They did reapply, and we recommend approval of that. The renewal applications are these. We recommend approval of all those. Central Region had one change application, and this was a change. I know we're doing big game numbers right now, but they requested to decrease their turkey numbers from 8 to 4, and this is a 50-50 split on turkeys, so it would be 2 to the public and 2 to the private, to the CWMU. We recommend approval of that. Best for last, I guess. Northeastern Region, we had a new Moon Ranch decrease their acreage 41%, which is greater than the 34%. It would kick them into the new category. It's 11,976 acre deer and elk CWMU, and we recommend approval of that. And Sand Creek is a brand new one. It's a 10,200 acre deer elk CWMU. Recommend approval of that one. And the renewal applications are such as Antelope Creek, Binnequin Canyon, Buckhorn Ranch, and Little Red Creek. And those are the changes from their previous applications. Okay. That concludes the CWMU portion of this. Mr. Chairman, if you want, you can just do the discussion on the CWMU portion, because the next one will be the Landowner Association. It might be easier to keep those separate.
Keep these two separate wise at this point. Questions from the rack?
I've got one, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Just curious, a place like Cabin Ranch, when they reduce their acreage, why would they want to do that? What, just out of curiosity.
Maybe I can have Derek reply to that.
Moon Ranch, they were over 20,000 acres, and it was two separate landowners that were combined on it, and the landowners decided to separate. So that's what the Sand Creek one is it's just a new...
Just a separation.
They just separated on that.
Probably just because it had something to do with the animals or stuff like
just,
that.
Just landowners. Just the landowners.
Sometimes it's people who can't get along.
Okay, Rod's got a question.
What are the minimum acreage requirements to qualify for a CWMU? Is there one?
Yeah, there are. For deer and antelope, it's a minimum of 5,000. For elk and moose, it's 10,000. So there's a variance process that is allowed in the proclamation that we have to go through that will allow for variances to property acreage minimums and configuration, like it's a non-contiguous piece. That's allowed for a rule, but it has to go through a process. It has to go through a regional recommendation and go through an advisory committee for a review and then be board approved.
Okay. Any questions from Iraq? Questions from the public? Any comments from Iraq? I have no comment cards from the public, so call for motion on number 9, CWMU Management Plan and the Landowner Association. And we'll go on into the new items after that.
I motion we accept it as presented.
Motion.
I'll second it.
Motion and second. Okay, all in favor? Unanimous? Okay. Great. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. With that, I will continue with the Landowner Association recommendations for 2015. The reason I have voucher recommendation is that all the permits basically come to the Landowner Association, the voucher that they take into a regional office and redeem for a permit. And that's why it has vouchers. So statewide, we received 15 applications. The division recommends an approval of 12 as we receive them, and we have two split recommendations and one recommendation to deny. For permit numbers, there would be a total of 15 landowner associations with 116 deer vouchers, one management buck voucher, 7 elk vouchers, and 8 pronghorn vouchers statewide. Have some split recommendations here. Not that we're butting heads, it's just.
I've been saving that one, haven't you?
You bet. I love it. So. Penguins Lake Landowner Association is a bull elk landowner association. They requested 10 permits, and this is quite common. A lot of times they'll request so many permits, but what we do is we have a formula that qualifies them for a certain number. They qualify for 7, and so the division recommends 7 permits. The Vernon Landowner Association, every year they request 35 permits, and I believe this is because they have 35 landowners and would like to give a tag to each landowner, but they only qualify for 30. The division recommended is 30. Recommendation is 30. And this can vary from year to year. It just depends on what is allocated for the limited entry unit. Pilot Mount Landowner Association is a bull elk. It's a brand new one. They requested one permit every year. They qualify for a quarter of a permit a year. And since This year is the first year that we've gone to a three-year application approval. And so all of the landowner associations, they don't have to reapply unless something changes on their application for 3 years. So they don't have to go get all the signatures, and which was quite a task for especially the Diamond Mountain Landowner Association. So what the Pilot Mountain Seated or Landowner Association would qualify as a quarter of a permit a year. And that's based on the percentage of the acreage. The Pilot Mountain Limited Entry Unit only has 3 bull elk permits. On the Utah side, it is split with Nevada. Nevada has 3, and Utah has 3. Both states can hunt the unit on both sides of the state line. Our recommendation, what they requested that, they said that they couldn't live with less than 1 a year, and so we recommended to deny the application. They did, I think there's a letter in your RAC packet that they're requesting a variance to allow the 1 permit every year. And the only other consideration we have on landowner associations is you were sent a letter from the Diamond Mountain Landowner Association requesting a variance to the public access rule. Would you like me to read that, or it was included in your...
Wasn't that last year's letter?
Yeah, they submit a letter every year.
The letter I got was last year's.
It should be
dated 13th.
Yeah, it's 13th, August 15th,
2013. Those guys are behind a year on
it. They might have just included the same letter for their application for this year, so. And I'm sure
I've actually got a copy of the letter for this year.
Oh, do you have? Time. Is it a different? Okay.
It's
landowners up there are just too lazy.
Okay. So, and that would require RAC and board approval for that variance. And if you need an explanation of the variance, what it is, I can do that. So.
Okay.
So.
Any other questions? Right. Okay.
Yeah, I got a question. Sure. How unique is that to have a variance? I mean, Diamond Mountain Landowners Association has a variance for the public access. Is that the only landowner association in the state that asks for and receives?
That variance?
That variance.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Questions from the audience? Okay, no questions? Any comments from the RAC? Okay.
I do have a comment. You know, this the Diamond Mountain Landowner Association started this just like 15 years ago, 13 years ago? 18 years ago. And since then, the deer herd has just progressively improved every year. And I feel that what we got going up there, somebody's doing something right. So I, not that I don't want to deny the public access to that land, but I think we're doing something right up there. I just soon support that. So,
that's right. Right where I was going next with the comments was to give the landowners step up to the mic and comment. You want to submit a letter for this year?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I've, you know, seen and witnessed, and some of the multiple concerns up there with the public and private landowners. Yeah, this has overcome a lot of problems they used to have. So we have a letter here from them. Is
the letter after the...
In the one of the packet. Go ahead.
The letter that was actually submitted last year was a request to delay this approval process for 3 years at a time. Is that correct? So we didn't have to do this every year. I think that's what's in that was in the packet.
Who are you? What's your name?
Pardon? John McCackie.
Thank you.
Yeah, we changed the rules. So.
Okay. This is just the one that I didn't read the date on it careful enough, obviously, but this is the one that I received at the application, so that's why I included it. So.
Okay, that's why it was included in the packet.
Right.
Okay.
But this would be a 3-year application.
So I need a motion on what was presented. We need a motion on the variance letter. We do not.
Yes, that's included.
It's included.
The RAC needs to, of course, the division is, has recommended approval, and so that would be okay.
We've got one other comment here. Garrick Hall, you had a comment?
That's for the next item.
Okay.
Chairman, I'll make the motion that we approve the division's recommendation on CWMUs and actually on landlord associations as presented.
Motion?
Yeah,
second.
I'll second that.
Okay. Motion and second. All in favor? Okay. Unanimous. Okay. Item 10. Scott.
Got a miscarry, don't we? Got a miscarry.
Yeah. Am I going to fight it anymore? I've got a box of Kleenexes in my office. You want me to bring them out?
I'll try not to unplug this. Okay, the next item will be on the agenda is changes to the landowner permit rule. The main change to this is establishing a new type of permit under the landowner permit rule. Right now we have landowner associations and general season buck deer, landowner buck deer permits. What we're establishing this with, in addition to that is the landowner appreciation permit, we're calling it. And I'll explain that. But the overview of all the recommendations we're making to the rule right now, the first thing would be we had some clerical changes throughout the rule. For example, the use of unit instead of region and eligible property instead of private lands. Just some housekeeping changes on there. The second item is the creation of the landowner appreciation permit. And the third item is we did some clarifications regarding public access to the private property for the limited entry landowner. Permits and associations. And it also, we had a clarification on the permit calculation process for limited entry landowner permits, which by doing that, we also created some new bookkeeping requirements for landowner associations to document public access. Okay. For the landowner appreciation permit, let me read from the rule. This is the intent of the landowner appreciation permit. This is right from the rule. It says the intent of the landowner appreciation permit is to provide an opportunity for landowners and their immediate family whose property provides habitat for migratory deer to purchase a general deer permit for the general unit hunt boundary where the landowner's property is located. It's been said earlier tonight that the importance of these private lands, they provide habitat for our deer herds and our elk herds, but we're dealing with the deer here. And I don't know if that can be stressed enough. It's been estimated that over 50% of our winter ranges in the state of Utah are on private properties. And so this landowner appreciation permit is just that. It's showing our appreciation in maybe a small way, but to some of the landowners that provide habitats for our big game herds. It's in areas in the state where private property provides a substantial contribution to deer population, meeting our management objectives. Some of these private lands don't meet the requirements for the other system we have already in place for a general landowner permit, but they're very critical for our migratory deer. And we're emphasizing migratory deer because we don't want to encourage resident deer that live in fields. So. It also provides an opportunity for these landowners to purchase a general season deer permit to hunt the applicable general season unit. And this is without having to go through the draw. The qualifications for the landowner appreciation permit are it's for private lands only. It's for the landowners and their immediate family only, no lessees. It's for 100 acres of cultivated and mechanically harvested croplands. That's a minimum one there. They can go more than that, but that's the bare minimum. The property has to provide habitat for migratory deer. As I said before, we don't really want to encourage resident deer living in fields. So it's for migratory deer. And the division will establish a map showing crucial corridors. for the herd management objective, meeting the herd management objective. Basically, it's going to be up to the regions to verify that they meet the qualifications to be able to qualify for this permit. So there'd be a locational requirement, land characteristics, ownership requirements, and other qualifying factors. The specifics of the appreciation permit, the applications will be available by May 1st, because before this time we really haven't set the numbers for the for each of the units, the deer units. The applicant has to choose a general season deer hunt, whether it be archery, muzzleloader, or rifle. It's on a first-come, first-served basis based on the application date when it's turned into the regions. The successful applicants are ineligible for a general landowner permit program and vice versa. What this is doing is it's creating a two landowner permit programs, one for 100 acres or more of cropland. The other one, it was a 640-acre minimum of habitat to qualify for one permit. But they can also receive one permit for every 640 acres. And these permits will be available to them without having to go through the draw. Only one permit per eligible property. There's no vouchers. Developing the recommendation for the permit numbers, that will be presented in the Spring Wildlife Board meeting. That's when the reason we put this in is because the permit's going to be recommended that the permits be in addition to the annual cap, and they're not to exceed 2% of the permits for each unit. So that's the landowner appreciation permit. Okay, the next item on there was the modifications to the limited entry landowner permit program. And what these are clarifications to the rule. So this is separate from the landowner appreciation permit, but we have made a clarification to the rule to make it clear how we were allocating the permits to these. The permit calculation is based on the lands enrolled in the landowner association and not the total private lands within the limited entry unit. There was some confusion on that, so it was clarified. The second part of that would be the landowners receiving vouchers must allow an equivalent number of public hunters onto his or her private land for the limited entry unit. It wasn't clearly stated in the rule whether the hunters were able to go on all of the landowner association lands or if it was allocated by individual landowners. And so that we had the attorneys clarify that for us. The landowner associations who handle and the distribution of the sorry here. They got me on a short leash.
For landowner reason.
What's that?
For good reason.
It's justified. Landowner associations who handle distribution of proceeds from the vouchers must provide public access to the members receiving the benefit. And this access is on a when requested basis. You know, we want to make sure it's fair to the public. What this creates, I thought I was already in the slideshow. Hang on a sec. What this creates is, wow. Okay, what this creates is some bookkeeping obligations for a landowner association. What we're requiring them to do is document the members who receive the vouchers. They currently already have to provide a permit distribution list. So they have to document members who receive vouchers, members of the public who request access to private lands, and which members provided the requested access. What this does is it provides an avenue for the division to document public benefit of the landowner permit program. If there are complaints, we have an avenue to address complaints on this to make sure that the public is being treated fairly on this. So with that, thank you.
Thank you, Scott. Okay, any questions from the RAC? No questions from the RAC. Any questions from the public?
getting started, are they?
That's the benefit of being last.
Is that the benefits of being last? That's good. Request a motion.
Comments?
I got one comment card. Thank you. I needed that reminder.
Comments from Rad?
Garrett.
I'm Garrett Hall with Utah Farm Bureau. Just wanted to speak in favor of the landowner appreciation tax. It's been mentioned tonight several times the value of private land to our deer herds, and we just feel that this is a way to show some appreciation for those landowners and hopefully a little bit of compensation. They provide some critical habitat to feed for those deer herds. So we recommend and encourage approval of this. Yeah, so thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any comments from the rack? I'd ask earlier, but
I've got a question, Mr. Chairman.
We were sleeping. Go ahead.
if a landowner receives a depredation permit for a certain part of his acreage, and then he's got some acreage that that isn't in cultivation, but it's being used by the wildlife, you know, in the terms of talking here. If he receives depredation permits on this other property, would that disqualify him from getting this appreciation permit on other properties?
No, it doesn't, because normally your depredation or your mitigation permits are for antlerless animals only. The only qualifier on this is that you couldn't have 2 buck permits in a year for individuals, but
Use your depredation as antlerless.
Yeah, usually depredation or antlerless, and this is for a general season buck permit. So,
it wouldn't disqualify you then?
No,
if
it would not.
Receive any other type of
no.
depredation type of permits?
No. This is an appreciation permit because we appreciate private landowners. So, yeah, this is not tied to depredation at all.
Okay. Anything further? Okay, motions from the board. Motion from the RAC.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we accept because it was presented.
I'll second.
Second.
Okay, motion and second.
Beth.
Okay. You have a motion and a second. Everybody in favor? Okay. Motion passed. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
We have one other order of business that we need to take care of. We need an assistant chair on this board. We've lost Carrie, and so we need somebody as a backup when I'm not around to go out to the board meetings and or operate this meeting. So I'm opening for motions for an assistant chair. I guess not a motion. I need some
to hold off if you want to, because we will have we've got two to three vacancies that will be filled in June. So, but, or you can go now. It's your,
okay.
It's your pleasure.
And you got what meetings we got coming up?
You got December, you got Bears, you've got then in April,
mm-hmm.
you've got permit numbers.
Purple's lifetime and antlerless.
And then I don't have.
Okay. So we got three meetings for June.
And antlerless, yeah, that's in April too, though.
Yeah.
April, May, I don't think there's one in June. So you've got three RAC meetings.
Three RAC meetings. Is there anyone that would like to be the assistant chair? Man, we could pull water on a party.
We got two big shoes to fill with you,
wow.
And you in place.
Uh,
I'd be glad to help you out, but I'm one of those that's going in June.
So you might as well do it till June then, buddy. Night we go.
I'd like to nominate Rob Morrison to fill that position.
Until June. Until June. In case I'm not around. Okay. Everybody in favor?
Aye.
Okay. I want to thank you guys all for coming. Very much appreciate it. Okay. Thank you. Public as well.